It's actually simple math. It's horrid math, but it's simple enough. If you take the 22 veteran suicides that are being reported each day across America, and you recognize that only 40% of the nation's states are reporting, 21 states, but representing 40% of the U.S. population are reporting. And then you realize that the studies that even the Veterans Administration has done on the 21 states that are reporting, saying that they're underreporting by 30% because the coroner is unaware of the victim's prior veteran's status, or they just don't bother to check that box at all. And so you do the math, and you update 22 for the 60% of the population that's not reporting, and the 30% that is missed in the 40% that is reporting. It's 80 per day. Pretty simple math from there. 80 times 365 days per year is 29,000. It's been 10 years since veterans have been coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. That's 290,000. Now, officially, the military number for deaths in Afghanistan is 2,306. In Iraq, 4,486. That's 6,792. The real number is actually 296,792. As a result, the deaths of American soldiers has been underreported by almost 300,000. It means that the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan was more costly in American military lives than the battle-related deaths associated with the Revolutionary War. 4,435. The War of 1812, 2,260. The Mexican-American War, where we stole California and Texas and New Mexico and Arizona, fair and square, 1,733. The Spanish-American War, where we decided we might as well steal the Philippines, 385. World War I. Military casualties, 53,513. The Korean War, 33,651. And Vietnam, where we made a bad situation worse and squandered so many lives, 47,369. Collectively, those wars total 143,000. Now, I left two wars out of that. But if you total the most costly American wars, and you just pull out the Civil War and World War II, the deaths attributed to the invasions of, and misguided invasions, counterproductive invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq cost twice as many lives as the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, the Korean War, and Vietnam combined. Twice as deadly as those wars combined. Wow. It's sobering, isn't it? Now, I'm a Jeffersonian in this regard. Jefferson did not sign the U.S. Constitution, because the Bill of Rights did not have an amendment expressly prohibiting the establishment of a military. That's what he wanted. He wrote that the establishment of a military was the single greatest crime that could be perpetrated against a free society, and that an established military, through propaganda, would rob people of the truth, that it, through taxes, it would rob them of their wealth. Through a constant onslaught of wars, and America has fought 101 wars since the first colonists came here. It's a war every 4 years. That this constant onslaught of wars that would be the direct result of having a standing military would cost Americans their lives, and that he said it would serve to concentrate power, and it would serve to perpetrate all manner of fraud. He said there was nothing that was more hostile to a nation's freedom than an established military. I'm a Jeffersonian in this regard. I agree with him. If I had a magic wand and could influence America, I would reduce the size of the U.S. military by 20% a year, every year, over the next 5 years. We would be freer. There would be far less sexual abuse, far fewer suicides. All the money would no longer be squandered. We could spend the money we saved on doing things that were constructive rather than destructive. And we would be no more vulnerable. In fact, we would be less vulnerable. In fact, to preclude any nation from invading and occupying America, all one has to do is what Jefferson encouraged. Honor the Second Amendment. There should be no limits on a person's ability to keep and bear arms. Which Jefferson said, it's essential to a free society, and that the arms that they should be able to keep and bear are the arms that would be used in a militia, because having private militias, he felt, was essential to freedom, so that the government could not impose its will on the people. If Americans were armed with any weapons they wished to have, it would be impossible for any nation to invade and occupy the country. You don't need a military. And most certainly do not need a military that's larger than the rest of the world's militaries combined. I want to spend the next 45 minutes of this program today on a series of reports about what I consider to be the most counterproductive institution in the world. I'm not a fan of the U.S. military. But I'm far more hostile of the Roman Catholic Church. I think over the course of its 1,700 years, it was conceived by Constantine based on the writings of Paul in the 4th century. And since that time, it has been the single most counterproductive influence on humankind. These stories are all related to the Roman Catholic Church. The first was published at the end of last year, is when I clipped this story. I never did present it to you. It's going to lead into a series of stories that all transpired this week. It was an extraordinarily bad week for the Roman Catholic Church. This story, which was published sometime in the fall of last year from Reuters. The United Nations Human Rights Panel has proposed a list of tough questions to the Vatican's about child abuse by Roman Catholic priests, a potential embarrassment for Pope Francis a few months into his papacy. So this was written right after Francis became Pope, the Argentine. And it was back in June, I believe, or July of last year, that the UN panel provided the questions that it was going to ask the Roman Catholic Church. It asked for documentation and answers to specific questions. The way the inquiry took place this week at the United Nations, where they began over a day, ask a series of questions to the Vatican. But the way this works is that the Vatican said that they wouldn't even attend unless all of the questions and everything that the UN wanted was submitted to them in advance so they could prepare their answers. This was not like what you would typically see at a trial, where the prosecutor gets to ask the witness questions and they have to answer spontaneously. They don't get a list of questions in advance that they can prepare pat answers for. But that's what the Roman Catholic Church required. So the United Nations gave them 6 months' notice and said, here's the documents that we want you to release. You signed as a signatory on the rights of the child. Therefore, we want detailed information on all cases of child sexual abuse committed by members of the clergy, brothers, or nuns of the Roman Catholic Church since the Holy See last reported some 15 years ago, which was the only time they reported. They set November 1st of last year as the deadline for a reply. They got nothing. The request was included in a list of issues posted by the Committee for the Rights of the Child website to be taken up when the Vatican appears before it next January, and that is now. It happened earlier this week, to report on the Church's performance under the 1990 UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. You see, there is no institution on earth that is more abusive of children's rights than the Roman Catholic Church. It will be the first time that what's called the Holy See, what a terrible name for such a repulsive institution, has been publicly questioned by an international panel over the child abuse scandal, which severely damaged the standing of the Roman Catholic Church in many countries around the world. Although for those who are still Roman Catholics, what the hell is wrong with you? And all sane people in the world have come to recognize how repulsive the Roman Catholic Church is, but you can't seem to figure it out. The Committee for the Rights of the Child has no enforcement powers, but a negative report after the hearing would be a blow to the church whose leader, Pope Francis, is striving to put a number of scandals behind him since succeeding Benedict the 16th, who resigned in February amidst scandals. In fact, Benedict resigned 1 week after the Los Angeles diocese was forced to surrender internal correspondence amongst high-ranking Catholic clerics on how they deliberately covered up sexual abuse claims that were later proven to be true by church members, where priests not only preyed upon young boys committing horrible and unspeakable acts of pedophilia, that the church was aware of them, that the church abused the victim, and that the church protected and covered up the crime to protect its interests. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the break. So here's the story. Towards the middle fall of last year, we've got Committee for Respecting the Rights of the Child asking the Roman Catholic Church to provide documentation on the sexual abuse of children that has been perpetrated by its clergy. Now, reasonable thing to do. You know, unless you're going to openly make the evidence available and to discuss it, you've got no chance of effectively dealing with it or stopping it. You know, it's through a confession and an admittance and an accurate view of the evidence that you put yourself in a position that you can deal with reality. And that's what they asked the Roman Catholic Church to do. It's like our presentation just a few moments ago on suicide rates. Unless you can examine the evidence and consider all of the evidence available and put it in context, you really aren't in a position to understand why engaging in windless wars is fraught with so much peril, why we ought not do it. It's why I spent so much time last week discussing the civil war that emerged in Iraq based upon America's intervention and how that spilled over into Syria and the overall consequence of our misjudgment. Because unless we can talk about what we did and the consequence of it, then we're likely to continue to perpetrate such travesties in the future. You don't learn a lesson until you can face the facts. That's what the Roman Catholic Church has never done. It continues to hide. It continues to deny. It continues to cover up. And you have to put this in a bit of perspective, too. Now, at Penn State, you had one perpetrator who ruined the lives of 20 young boys without the knowledge of the university. And when the university was told that there was that this may have been happening, they didn't cover it up, but they certainly didn't go, they didn't prosecute either. Now, Penn State was wholly wrong. And their response to the one pedophile, the coach, horribly, horribly wrong. And, you know, the Pope of Penn State, Joe Paterno, he's been, you know, he's now dead, but he was disgraced before he died. A lifetime of positive achievements absolutely rendered meaningless because of his lapse of judgment in terms of protecting children from a pedophile. And he only had one person's witness as to the nature of the crime that was being perpetrated. The president of the university, for not aggressively prosecuting the perpetrator and not dealing with it in a in an overt manner, he lost his job and he is now facing criminal charges. The perpetrator himself is in prison for a lifetime. But look at what the Roman Catholic Church has done by comparison to this enormously large university. In the Roman Catholic Church, there's not one perpetrator. There are tens of thousands of perpetrators. Certainly thousands. Not one, but thousands. In the Roman Catholic Church, there's not 20 victims. Heck, there were 20,000 to 30,000 victims in one period of time in one small country, Northern Ireland. Now, the real number is in the hundreds of thousands, not 20. It's not something that took place over 5 years, but instead 5 decades. And it's not a case of the authorities knowing full well, having the testimony of the parents, having evidence, and then choosing to cover up that evidence and to lie to the victims, in fact, harass the victims while moving the perpetrator into another division to savage other children, which is what the Roman Catholic Church did. I mean, the difference between what happened at Penn State and what the Roman Catholic Church is doing is 1,000 to 1. But the Roman Catholic Church being 1,000 times more egregious, more guilty, more hideous, more repulsive than was Penn State. What we thought was the greatest crime ever witnessed in an American university. This article, written long before the public spectacle took place this week, said that it would be the first time that the Holy See has been publicly questioned by an international panel since the sexual abuse scandal so damaged its reputation around the world. Now, the Council for the Rights of the Child has no enforcement powers, but nonetheless, it is just another opportunity for the Roman Catholic Church to come clean, to tell the truth, to admit to priestly pedophilia, to admit that they covered it up, to admit that it was their policy to cover it up, and to come clean. By issuing its questions, the Geneva-based CRC brushed aside a Vatican warning that it might pull out of the Convention on the Rights of the Child if the committee pushed too hard on the issue. This is one of many reasons I find the Roman Catholic Church to be the most despicable organization in the world today. Here is this, a organization that presents itself as a as the authorized agent of God on earth, and they are saying that if a if the United Nations pushes too hard on asking them to tell the truth about its history and priestly pedophilia that they're just going to pull out. We're not going to tolerate you asking us tough questions. We're not going to tolerate you asking us to reveal the evidence. In a report of its own in late 2011, posted on the UN website last October, the Holy See reminded the CRC of reservations on legal jurisdictions and other issues it made when it signed the Global Pact. And so rather than disclosing the information, no, the Roman Catholic Church is saying, no, there's limitations. And it said any new interpretation would give it grounds for terminating and withdrawing from the treaty. Now wait till you hear what their limitation is. In its request for information, the CRC asked how the Vatican was ensuring that abuser priests have no more contact with children and what instructions it has issued to ensure that the cases known to the church are reported to police. In several countries, including the United States, Ireland, the church has been accused of simply moving suspect priests from one diocese to another, and then of handling the cases secretly. The committee also asked if the church had investigated the Magdalene laundries run by nuns in Ireland over several decades until they were closed in 1996, where female inmates were treated as slaves. Now, I'm going to tell you about the Magdalene asylums, which were not closed until 1996. But I want to tell you that before I even get to the report as why the Roman Catholic Church says, no, you can't ask us for that information. We're not going to tell you anything. We're going to continue to stonewall. You have no right to ask us any information about the priest's abuse of children. Why, they say? Oh, because the Vatican is a separate state and we claim diplomatic immunity. That's their interpretation. Here's the story about the Catholic Magdalene asylums. The headline, this story was published June 27 of last year. Girl slaves of Catholic Magdalene asylums to receive compensation, but not from the Roman Catholic Church. Now, that church is way too repulsive to accept responsibility for the crimes, the hideous crimes they've perpetrated now. This is from the state that is providing compensation. 20 years ago, shock washed over Ireland after the Catholic Church sold a parcel of a North Dublin convent's grounds to a commercial developer, and the construction dig began. 155 bodies were discovered in unmarked graves. The place had been a Magdalene asylum for wayward girls. Apparently, inmates who met an early end had been buried in secret, many without a death certificate, without notification to their parents or other family members, and all without the dignity of even the simplest grave marker. This is the work of the Roman Catholic Church. Initially, conceived as a rehabilitation center for sex workers, the Magdalene asylums, also known as the Magdalene laundries for the women's work, that's in quote, became slave labor camps. And they grew far worse into houses of horror. The girls, many of whom were not even in their teens, many of whom were never engaged in prostitution, were forced to work 7 days a week without pay. The short-term treatment intended by the founders eventually gave way to long-term incarceration. Though conditions varied from one asylum to the next, a strict code of silence was in place for most of the day throughout the Magdalene system. long prayer sessions were mandatory. Oh, dear God, the God of the Roman Catholic Church, please help us torture these little girls. Please help us continue to profit from their slave labor. Worse, over 100 years, beatings and sexual abuse are thought to have been epidemic. And you didn't have to be a sex worker to qualify to be saved by God's representatives here on earth. The article reads, by the 1870s, asylum candidates extended beyond prostitutes to unmarried mothers, mentally retarded women, and children, especially girls, who had been abused by their parents. Even young girls who were considered too flirtatious or too beautiful were sent to the asylum by their families at the urging of priests. Others reportedly ended up in a Magdalene asylum for being slow learners. They might never receive a lick of non-religious education again. The nuns were known to forge school reports and send those girls' relatives the forged report cards to conceal that they had been turned into slaves. Recalls one student, we never saw daylight. We never heard music. It was not normal. It was normal for girls to fall ill and never be seen again. Sometimes we used massive industrial arms to press sheets for local hotels. They were raging hot, and you had to concentrate hard to make sure that your hands didn't get caught and burned. The steam nearly took off our skin. In the end, we got used to being burned. It was part of everyday life. If it didn't take much to be sent to one of these religious hellholes, getting out wasn't so easy. Without a family member on the outside who could vouch for them, many incarcerated individuals stayed in the asylums for the rest of their lives, many ultimately taking religious vows. It was the Stockholm Syndrome. Given Ireland's historically conservative sexual values, Magdalene asylums were generally accepted as a social institution until well into the second half of the 20th century. They disappeared with changes in sexual mores, or as historian Francis Finnegan suggests, as they ceased to be profitable for the Roman Catholic Church. It was the advent of the washing machine that caused them to be closed because these slaves were no longer creating a profit for Roman Catholicism. Those 155 bodies, well, after they were discovered in the early 1990s, 1993 to be exact, they were quickly cremated and reburied in a mass grave. That raised a lot of suspicion. Why weren't forensic investigations allowed to work the scene? What were the church and civil authorities hiding? What were they afraid of you knowing? The latter, at least, are now offering an apology. That would be the civil authorities, to all Magdalene survivors, as well as a financial olive branch. That is because the Irish state was complicit in the scandal, having botched its oversight and having profited from the girls who worked in the laundries, washing and repairing prison uniforms and the like. Ireland will pay. Several hundred former residents of the Catholic nun Magdalene laundries, at least 34.5 million euros, about 45 million U.S. dollars, to compensate them for their years of unpaid labor and public shame, the government announced, following a decade-long campaign by former residents of the workhouses, the slaves. Justice Minister Alan Shatter apologized to the women, an estimated 770 survivors out of the more than 10,000 who were enslaved in these facilities. from the 1920s to 1996. That it had taken so long for them to receive compensation. The move marked the latest step in two decades' effort by Ireland to investigate and redress the human rights abuses in Irish Catholic institutions. I would be remiss if I didn't interrupt this reading of this report to tell you that as egregious as this is, it is not the most egregious act by Roman Catholics in Ireland. When the Irish government investigated claims of sexual abuse of young boys and girls in Ireland at the hands of Roman Catholic priests and nuns, it determined that over 30,000 Irish juveniles, typically preteens, had been abused by the Catholic Church. 30,000 of them. The girls that were raped, who were tortured, who were enslaved by the Roman Catholic Church over a century of time, do not think that the state's willingness to provide them some compensation for the time that they served as slaves doing the laundry and tailoring for Irish prisons is sufficient. Maureen Sullivan, who founded Magdalene Survivors Together, says that justice has still not been served. Because I was 12 years of age. I was a child. My education was stolen from me. My identity was taken from me. We had no outside communications. Our letters were checked. We had no playtime. It was all taken from us. And none of that has been taken into consideration. Ireland's Catholic Church, meanwhile, continues to wash its hands of the whole affair. The Irish government has at least made a serious gesture. The church should show that it has a conscience, after all, and do the same. Now, the Roman Catholic Church does not have a conscience. It is the single most despicable institution ever conceived by man. CBS reported, Dateline Vatican City. This was now about a week ago. The Vatican is gearing up for a bruising showdown over the global priest sex abuse scandal, forced for the first time to defend itself at length and in public against allegations it enabled the rape of tens of thousands of children by protecting pedophile priests and its own reputation at the expense of the victims. Boy, that's a mouthful. It enabled the rape of tens of thousands of children. It enabled the rape of tens of thousands of children. It protected pedophile priests, causing more children to be raped. And it did so to protect its own reputation at the expense of the victims. This is like the U.S. military, except in this case, the victims aren't minors. The Holy See on Thursday will be grilled by a U.N. committee in Geneva on its implementation of the U.N. Convention on the Rights of the Child. Among other things, the treaty calls for signatories to take all appropriate measures to protect children from harm and to put children's interests above all else. The Roman Catholic Church can't do that because they only have one interest, and that's themselves. The Holy See ratified the convention in 1990 and submitted a first implementation report in 1994. By the way, that was 4 years, or 2 years, I guess, before the Magdalene Laundry was closed, where the girls were tortured, raped, enslaved. It was still perpetrating that crime when it submitted its first report. But it didn't provide any progress reports for nearly a decade and only submitted one in 2012 after coming under criticism following the 2010 explosion of child sex abuse cases throughout Europe, particularly the one in Ireland that revealed that the Roman Catholic Church had sexually abused 30,000 Irish Catholic boys and girls. Victims groups and human rights organizations rallied together to press the UN committee to challenge the Holy See on its abuse record, providing written testimony from victims and evidence outlining the global scale of the problem. The reports cite case studies in Mexico and Britain, grand jury investigations throughout the United States, and government fact-finding inquiries from Canada to Ireland to Australia that detail how the Vatican's policies, its culture of secrecy and fear of scandal contributed to the problem. Their submissions reference Vatican documents that show its officials knew about a notorious Mexican molester decades before action was taken. When we return to Shattering Myths, I'm going to share a little bit about Marcel Marcial and why the Vatican continued to cover up his molestation of young priest candidates, of young children as well, of his drug abuse, for one reason. We'll consider it in a moment.